Welcome into an episode of Light the Lamp here on DuckStream. I'm Alexis Downey, your host. Happy to be with you in the new year. And as we get rolling along with this NHL season, it's so good to have someone back that we haven't chatted with in quite a while. ESPN NHL insider and reporter Emily Kaplan. Emily, so good to have you. How are you doing today?
I'm doing so well, Alexis. It boggled my mind when you said I hadn't chatted with you formally in 2 years on the Duck Stream. But it's just been so fun watching you, honestly. Like, you are such a rising star in this industry. You've totally taken this job and ran with it with Anaheim. So I've loved following your work, love what you're doing with Duck Stream, and I've been really enjoying watching this team. I know a little recency bias hasn't been a great stretch, but it's been a really fun time in Anaheim.
Well, first of all, thank you so much, and happy to have you as a part of the stream today. I know that our listeners always enjoy getting to hear your insight, and you're all over the place. So glad we were able to track you down for this show here today. So let's start with
beautiful Bristol, Connecticut, guys. Yeah. Here's the double tree.
There you go. Your role has kind of changed a little bit this year. You're doing more in studio work. So what has that transition been like?
Yeah, well, still doing some game broadcasts, but I really enjoy the opportunity to be in studio, get to sit with the guys at the table. And I think it's just an opportunity to flex how much I know about what's going on in the league, bring fans even closer. And just a role that in a lot of ways, I think the sport needs, especially here in the US. Like, we always talk about grow the game. Well, in America, like, we treat hockey sometimes on the same level as the other sports, but there's still so much more we can do in terms of legitimizing it and taking fans deeper inside, bringing them news, and also just infiltrating the ESPN ecosystem and getting more stories on our website, on our bottom line as part of our shows. So I've taken a lot of pride in that. Definitely having to work the phones a little more and lean on my relationships, but I've been covering this league for a while. I do know a lot of what's going on. It's been really fun to be able to share that and shed some light and continue growing with this role.
Well, we have to tell everyone listening that you actually had to take a phone call right before we jumped on. So it just speaks to how busy your phone's probably always ringing these days.
I would not have blown you off. It was a general manager. We've got four teams on the schedule tonight. It was one of the teams. So we had to know what was going on with the backup goalie. Everything we need to know here, Alexis, I'm giving you behind the curtain.
Very important. You got to know those things. And diving into this role that you have, you know, the insider role, how have you kind of grown with it, and like what have you learned, I guess, in this type of role?
Yeah, in a lot of ways, I think it's challenging in hockey. It's a very small community, and as we know in hockey, they don't really like to share much information. You know, we don't know a lot in terms of injuries. It's lower body or upper body. People can keep things really close to the vest. You know, in covering football, I notice a lot of my colleagues will get intel from agents or coaches or GMs because they want to get their name out there. And often when I'm getting information from people in hockey, they're like, this cannot be traced back to me no matter what. And there's so much more cloak and dagger. But at the same time, I've been able to make inroads, again, kind of doing my sales pitch of why it's so important to get this info out there, even if we're not comfortable for it, because it's the way that elevates our game. And then I'm also just really cognizant that this is a role that traditionally has not been held by women. A lot of, you know, men come from the same path. They look the same. They often look the same as the men that they're covering. And that makes it a lot easier for them in a lot of ways to create those connection points and share information. And I come in with a journalistic background, but I'm a 34-year-old woman from New Jersey. Like, I don't have a ton in common with a lot of these guys. I played high school field hockey and lacrosse. Like, we don't really bond over our shared experiences in that way. But it's them getting to know me as a trustworthy source. You know, I think having to kind of have them understand my personality and what I'm about is also a big part of the job, to know that I'm really invested in this game as much as they are. So it's just been interesting to be able to grow my career in this way. And again, just having to keep kind of introducing myself and explaining myself and trying to get the league to places where in a lot of ways they're very uncomfortable going.
Yeah, I'm glad you mentioned that, because I mean, one, you're doing a really great job of it, but also to have a woman in that role and to have that visibility for other people, you know, who other women that might be interested in going into something like this, it's really important.
For sure. And, you know, visibility is so important. And there really weren't many women that I looked up to as newsbreakers growing up, or this is not something that I even dreamed about doing. At the same time, there's no reason a woman shouldn't do this role or can't do this role. And there's so many more inroads we have perspectives that we have where we can be just as good, if not better, in a lot of areas as men. So it's leaning on those strengths a lot of the time. And again, just the visibility is important. There's so many times that girls reach out to me, and that means the most to me, of saying like, I see you on TV, and it makes me believe that I can do that too. And I love just to open so many different doors for women that they can pursue any path that they want. And this is one of them, or other roles are another option as well.
Yeah, that's awesome. You talked about getting to be on the desk a lot, and with that group of guys, well, you have a new face too with ESPN's NHL coverage this year. And TJ Oshie, what's it been like getting to pick his brain a little bit, you know, as a former player and a more recent former player too, of course?
Yeah, for sure. I'm really excited because tonight, and sorry, this might be dated by the time people listen, but I'll be on the desk with him, PK Subban, and John Buccigross. So I think it's going to be a really good energy and collaboration of personalities. But TJ has been such a good ad for us, as well as EJ, Eric Johnson. We got the TJ and EJ.
That's right.
AJ Molesko's already with us. So we're cornering the market on the Jays. But both of those guys, especially just being so closely removed, they still have so many friends on the respective teams that were on. TJ is still so involved with the Washington Capitals. EJ lives in Denver. You know, he was on the Avs when they won most recently. Like, he's plugged in. And I just love both picking their brains and seeing what they see on the ice, but also just hearing the way that they've shifted at looking at the game in a different way. Like, TJ has told us that this is the most hockey he's ever watched. Like, obviously, you know, he's a fan of the game and he'd watch clips and tape, but he would kind of remove himself when he was a player because there's sometimes there's overload. So sitting in the studio with him and watching games is awesome because you see the things that he picks up now as a fan and a neutral observer. And they've just been such naturals. Like, both of them need like absolutely no training. Like, it's just all about reps, and the more comfortable they get, they're going to be total studs and stars. And love the fact that they're American too.
Yeah,
we need more of that.
You probably have truly like learned a lot from just getting to see their perspective, like you're talking about, and that always makes you better too, in a sense. So Emily, in talking about now with the game role, I know I watched the game on Saturday. You were in Boston, that Boston New York game. Wow, what a final score that was for the Bruins, just really handing it to the Rangers. But what's going on in your perspective with the Rangers this year? That's been an interesting, I guess, storyline from someone that's obviously not on the East Coast, just watching from afar.
Yeah, it was one of the most entertaining 10-2 games I've ever been to. Like, sometimes that becomes a snooze fest when it's such a blowout, but there just felt like there was something going on at all times. The Rangers, to me, are a team that just has an identity crisis. Like, they come and they bring in Mike Sullivan, and you think you know exactly what Mike Sullivan is, right? He's been in this league so long. He demands a certain level. He's very attuned to details and defensive responsibility. And unfortunately, like, the roster he inherited, it just doesn't quite gel. And I think that there's just a talent dearth, quite frankly, where they've got some top-level talent, and then you look at the rest of the roster, and it just doesn't necessarily have as much compete, where you've had Igor Shesterkin masking a lot of mistakes for the last several months and really the last couple seasons. So I think they're kind of going through it, adapting to this new style, getting that buy-in while also understanding some of the deficiencies that were just part of their roster construction. Because the East is so clustered, like, they still felt like this is a season where they can go for it. But now Shesterkin's out, they're without Adam Fox, who's their other best player, who's also masking a lot of mistakes. You're kind of in a position now right before the Olympic break where they're asking some tough questions. And it seems increasingly likely that they're going to head to like a mini retool this season of saying, okay, it's not within reach. This is not our year. Let's just make a couple decisions and really get on the same page and go full bore next year. But we're still like a couple weeks away from the Olympics. You never know what's going to happen. Yeah. I think the Ducks fans would understand this as well as anyone. It's like a win four, lose four league. Like, you go on a streak at any time. So we shall see.
Yeah. We've been obviously paying a bit of attention to that team in particular because of all the former Rangers that we have here in Anaheim. And, you know, I was thinking back to it, the piece that you did with Jacob Trouba. I specifically remember that one. I think it was for opening night, like two seasons ago, maybe it was. Do you remember what I'm talking about?
Yeah, it was right after he was named captain. So God, it might've been three seasons ago. Time is so squishy. But yeah, it was a piece on him and his wife. And, you know, I think a lot of times we don't really understand the full picture when it comes to these guys of everything they're going through at home. And it was just about how his wife, Kelly, her career was just as important to him as his own career was, even as captain of the New York Rangers. She's a doctor. He was in Canada. It was just really hard to do long distance when she wasn't getting medical licenses. So it was a really interesting piece, I thought, about the sacrifices both of them made so that they could both find a way to pursue their dreams. And at the time it was in New York, and now it's in Southern California.
Yeah. And for those listening, if I'm sure it's somewhere online, they anyone that wants to go watch that can, because I, like I said, specifically remembered that. And I thought it was a really great job by you, an interesting piece. So in talking a little bit more about the Eastern Conference, what other storylines are kind of standing out to you? I mean, there's, it feels like there has kind of been a lot with what's going on. It's very close, you know, in the conference overall.
Yeah, I think in the East, it's just that it is so, so condensed in those standings. Like, you can go on a 3-game winning streak and then all of a sudden find yourself in first place and then lose 2 games and you're out of the playoff picture. I think with this really condensed schedule right now, because we're taking the Olympic break, teams are just going through it. Like, we're in flu and virus season right now. Mm-hmm. We're in situations where like 3-4 guys can go down at a time. And then all of a sudden the team's like, holy cow, who are we actually icing right now? And we have to go play again tomorrow night too. So it's kind of a little bit of a scramble in the NHL right now. I think it's going to make for a really exciting post-Olympic break. I think a lot of teams don't know exactly what their team's going to look like after the break. We don't know what type of attrition is going to happen in Milan. You know, obviously it's going to be a competitive tournament as long as the ice holds up. So, you know, there probably will be injuries and everyone's going to come back. Half the league is super rested, but maybe rusty, probably more like 3/4 of the league. The other guys that played over are kind of exhausted. And it's going to be like a couple days to the trade deadline and go. So it's a really exciting and hectic time in the league right now. And it's been a really fun time to cover it.
Do you think that this is going to make the trade deadline this year, I guess, have more attention on it?
I know that the league is hoping to capture momentum from the Olympics. So in terms of attention of just like general eyeballs, yes, because we're hoping more people are just paying attention to hockey. I think it's been really interesting because we have the salary cap going up and therefore more teams are just able to keep their players. So there's been less player movement than maybe us as fans or people who watch the game have wanted. I think before the Olympic break, there's going to be like a little bit of flurry of action. There's some teams that just want to get a couple pieces of business done. But largely, I think a lot of teams are waiting. We'll use that Olympic break to have those conversations, to figure out, are guys extending? Where can they go if they're not going to, if they're going to get traded? And then it's going to be like, again, a huge shock to the system when we all get back from Milan of how quickly things are happening. And I think the league's just going to be very chaotic.
Well, speaking of getting back from Milan, you're going to be there. How excited are you to cover the Olympics?
I'm so, so pumped. I was able to go to the Paris Olympics in the summer, which was a completely different experience. But to cover the sport that I so closely follow professionally, I'll be covering the men and the women and just the stakes, right? Like you mentioned TJ Oshie. TJ, and like he'd be the first to admit this, like wouldn't be on ESPN or wouldn't be a household name if not for his heroics at the 2014 Olympics when he became TJ Sochi and was, you know, the star of the shootout, and all these fans back home were just like, who is this guy? This is awesome. Mm-hmm. So the Olympics just have the ability to transcend the NHL circle or hockey circle and really showcase our sport. And from the U.S. perspective, like we haven't won a gold medal since the 1980 miracle on ice in men's hockey. The women, they've gotten it done. And we've just grown so much as a hockey country since then. There's so much more talent. The pool's insane when you see some of the guys that were left off of the roster. And I love the fact that the Americans are just not shying away from what's at stake. It's gold or bust. And they're a brash group. You saw that at Four Nations, led a lot by the personality of the Tkachuk brothers. And it's just going to be a super fun team to cover.
Is there a player that you're surprised that was left off the roster?
Adam Fox, in terms of the U.S., Fox for sure, just because I know he was injured last year, wasn't the greatest Four Nations, but he's still one of the elite defensemen in this league. And it just felt like they went with a stylistic choice for GM Bill Guerin, going with bigger guys, going, you know, with maybe a little bit more physicality, guys that might have been different skaters than Adam Fox was. And then obviously Jason Robertson and Cole Caulfield. Like, I personally feel like at Four Nations, what they needed was a big goal. Those are guys that can come in and score that big goal. They just have it in their DNA. But when you listen to Bill Guerin and the decision makers, it was so much about versatility for them. You know, in this type of tournament, guys who can slot in different places, and they were looking for more fit rather than they were looking for just like an all-star roster with the best guys. And that's why Cole Caulfield and Jason Robertson were on the outside looking in.
I love that video too, where no one was answering his call. He's trying to call them. Oh, you made the Olympic team. No
to be
one's
fair,
answering.
He started really early. Okay. Like I remember talking to him the day before, like, what's the plan tomorrow? And he's like, I'm starting early. So I have to fact check with him. But my guess is, you know, these guys, they prioritize sleep as they should. They're just in bed.
Oh, that's so funny. And when you're there, are you going to be able to see any of the other sports going on?
I'm hopeful. It's interesting. This is such a spread out Olympics. So the only things like actually in downtown Milan, from my understanding, are the skating events. It's ice hockey, figure skating, speed skating. Everything else is in the mountains and it's like a couple hours away. Oh. Like even curling. My girlfriend is covering the Swedish curling team. Apparently they're a big deal. They've won a medal. And she told me that she was going to be like a couple hours away and I probably wouldn't see her. So we'll see. I have a feeling between the men and the women, if the practice rink is ready with practice schedules and things like that, we'll see if I can get out. If not, it might just be a lot of Milan time. And if I have some off time, obviously I'll try to get to the skating, but maybe a little shopping too.
As you should when you're in Italy.
Twist my arm, Alexis.
Yeah. Going along with this too, you know, you've been covering the whether the rink is going to be finished and it looks close at this point. You know, they have tried to play on the ice. So kind of your thoughts on where that's at.
I think it's been super frustrating from the NHL and PA's perspective because they've been flagging these issues for years of like, guys, we know what it takes to put on a rink. Like, you've got to get going here. And for them to do a test event like a month before the games begin is pretty unprecedented and not ideal. From my understanding, the ice will be ready. The test event went mostly well. Yes, there was like a hole in the ice at one point. They fixed it. They've got some time to work on that. The bigger issue from what I gather is that just like everything else won't be ready. Like the fan experience is not going to be the same. Concessions are now moving to like food trucks outside. There's some questions about the plumbings and the bathrooms, things that we just like assume as givens when we attend, you know, NHL games here in North America aren't necessarily given when you're building a rink from scratch. So we think the ice will be ready. We're hopeful most of the dressing rooms will be ready. We're hopeful the practice rink will be ready. But more than that, I think at this point, everyone, as one owner told me, like, we're pot committed. We're going. We'll get there and we'll figure it out.
That's great. Well, it's going to be an amazing tournament and just looking forward to seeing all the talent there. But I know that we are going to have a couple talented guys from the Anaheim Ducks that'll be there representing their respective countries. So let's get into the Ducks this season. You touched on them earlier, what a start they had, but kind of what you've made of this new Ducks team this year.
Impressive is the word. And I know I'm coming after a losing streak, although it was a great win against the Dallas Stars. But just as a whole, and I'm trying to just take a bird's eye view of what you've seen, this is the team that has drafted extremely well, so well that they've been able to starve off the long rebuild that so many teams really struggle to get out of. And then they've been able to pepper the roster with veteran talent to be competitive now. And you knew they were going to be competitive now once you bring in Joel Quenneville. Like, you don't bring in second winningest coach of all time when you expect to be a team that's like maybe fringe playoffs. Like, you expect to be a playoff team. And I love that that's where Pat Verbeek sees his guys. Obviously, you know, consistency is huge in this league, and you've seen flashes of what this Ducks team can do. They kind of need to put it together for long stretches, but I love the bones of the roster. I think the core is there. I'm curious to see if they will add this year's deadline. I know they've kind of been sniffing around some big names the last 2 years ready to make that move. And they brought in some via trades, whether it's Trouba or Kreider or someone like that. But in season, I'm really curious to see if they can get something done here in the next 2 months. But then just the stars that they have that are so young are just so fun to follow. Like, Dostal has just turned into the guy. Like, you're like, okay, is he him? Is he him? He's totally him. And I'm so excited to watch him at the Olympics and see what he can do there. And then Leo Carlson. I mean, like, this is a kid that is a face of a franchise and just completely doesn't look like anything is too much for him. Just has the presence on the ice, super, super competitive to be that two-way center that can lead a team. And I cannot wait to see, from my understanding, nobody's in a rush here, but what his next contract looks like, because it's going to be a superstar contract. Like, when Connor Bedard, everyone's talking about, like, what's his contract going to look like? The only comparable for Connor Bedard in the league is Leo Carlson, and that's it.
Yeah, the time will be coming around here soon once we get through the season. And like you said, just waiting to see what that ends up looking like. You touched on Coach Q, too. You live in Chicago, and you know the history there. So, you know, what what is it like seeing him back coaching, I guess, from your perspective?
I've loved it. I just think he's such a beloved figure in this game. And when you talk to so many guys in Chicago who played for him, like, the first thing they always mention is just who he is as a person, of just like, you know, just how much he cared about them, his love for horse racing, some of like the fun, quirky things that you'll hear about him behind the scenes. But like, he's just that guy that everyone just adores. And I think being out of the game probably gave him a new appreciation for what it means to be behind an NHL bench. And his intensity obviously is something that stands out, but it's cool to see him come back in this way and hopefully, you know, end on the note that he wants to end on, which is another Stanley Cup, just with a different organization.
Yeah, that's what we're hoping for in bringing in a guy like him. And Emily, when you look at the rest of the Western Conference, what else stands out to you about everyone out here on the West?
I'd say it's the central division of just what a murderer's row that has become on the top, where it feels like everyone now, especially when Quinn Hughes went to the Minnesota Wild, is going to have to keep up with the Joneses. And like, you look at the Dallas Stars and you look at the Colorado Avalanche and you're like, okay, what's their next move? Like, how are they going to continue to find a way to elevate themselves? Because two out of those three teams will emerge the second round and one's going to have to go out in the first round just because of the playoff format. So that's the immediate thing that stands out to me. And then the other is, honestly, it's like the Ducks and Sharks. It's these two teams that I think the Ducks always internally, like if you listen to Pat Verbeek or people who talk to Pat Verbeek, like he knew they were a little bit ahead. But just the way that both of them arrived this year as appointment television of like, look, we're here. We're not just like, again, maybe a fringe playoff team. Like, we're really pushing for a spot. I think that's been exciting as well.
Yeah. The young players in California right now, they're on the rise, and it's been fun to watch the little rivalry that we got going. I mean, it was a rivalry. Now it's renewed again at this point. So it's been fun to watch this season. Emily, anything exciting coming up for you? I mean, besides the Olympics, anything else going on with the rest of your season?
Yeah, well, before we head out to the Olympics, we do have our outdoor game. It's going to be in Tampa Bay and completely different from the Winter Classic that we just saw in Miami. I mean, this one is fully outdoor, open air. There will be a tent, from my understanding, like over the ice, just to keep it cool until the very last minute. But I think a lot more variables than what we saw in Miami in terms of the roof, like anything can go. It's during Gasparilla Festival, which is their big St. Patrick's Day of Pirates, is how I could best describe it. So it's going to be wonky. It's going to be silly. And I think I love the fact that the league is constantly just like pushing itself to do different events like this. So we're all excited for that on January 31st.
All right. Well, enjoy. And thank you again for joining us here on DuckStream. So good to catch up with you, and looking forward to your coverage at the Olympics as well.
Thank you, Alexis. I meant every word I said. Like, you're an absolute force. It's been so, so cool watching your career, and Ducks fans are so lucky that you're in Southern California covering them.
Thank you so much.
This is an Anaheim Ducks original production on DuckStream.